Vlogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Vlogging the Boys Cowboys Radio Season 2. I'm Landon McCool, and with me, as always, in a second season of our great podcast is Rabble Rouser. Rabble, we are days away from training camp, my friend. You are days away from flying out to California. How you feeling?
Well, I think you just answered your own question. I'm feeling great because I'm days away from flying out to California. Training camp is the kickoff for everything, but it's just a perfect environment to watch a team come together, and it's the kind of anchor for me every year in terms of my following the team. So I can't wait. I really can't. And other things that are making me happy, as you mentioned, this is the first podcast of season two, and I'm really excited about building on the work we did together last year. I think we the podcast in year one grew a lot, and you and I kind of figured things out, and I think really came up with something that was a kind of clear expression of both of our particular perspectives. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that grows this year. And speaking of building on work that people did last year, Cowboys have done a couple of interesting things in the recent part of the offseason. You want to
We should catch everyone up. So I guess Basically since the last time we've spoken, Dez Bryant has been signed. Hooray. Applause all around. I don't know that was too concerning, but I do think, anytime you get within, 30 minutes of the actual deadline to get it done, I guess there will be some bullets to sweat. I got to say, I had every confidence, honestly, that it was going to happen. But I know a lot of people who were feigning confidence, who were quietly texting and DMing and emailing me saying, is this going to happen, man? Because I'm starting to get a little bit nervous. but it did finally get done in the last minute. And, what are your thoughts just generally about that? I mean, obviously, we're obviously big Dez Bryant fans, but the numbers, everything look good to you?
I think they do. I think that they're fair. I think both sides, both parties, conceded a little and got some of the things that were important to them. And I think it's a good deal for Dez, and ultimately it's a good deal for the team. One of the things we've noticed about Dez, as people who are privileged to go to training camp every year, is, as you mentioned, he's the face of the franchise, but he's also the heart and soul of the team. We've talked before about the way he resembles a different number 88, Michael Irvin, in terms of the guy who's the kind of spiritual competitive core of the team. He's indefatigable. He never gets tired. He always plays the game like he's a young colt running through a meadow for the first time. And he's also the guy that like rallies the team. So remember last year in training camp when they were those two practices against the Raiders, and then things got a little bit nasty and they were real competitive, and they just got real punchy. It was Dez who rallied, who got the guys together and said, hey, are we going to take this? No, we're not. And, reminded them, and the Cowboys came out and hit the Raiders in the mouth. And so Dez is the guy that gets this team fired up. He provides them energy. And so given that he is that figure, the Cowboys got a bargain with, the contract that they ended up settling on.
I agree. I mean, the only way you get major, huge deals with superstars done is both sides have to compromise, obviously, to get it done. And I think, both sides did a good job of kind of stating their case and putting their foot down at the right time to get the deal done. And ultimately, it was a good deal for both sides. And frankly, any time that Dez is getting paid as much as Demaryius Thomas, I think that's a good deal for the Cowboys, frankly, because I think Dez is not just the best wide receiver in football, in my opinion, but he is, everyone talks about Ray Lewis, and for years this team talked about, oh, we need a Ray Lewis-type leader, blah, 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 blah. I think Dez is that guy. Just like you explained, he's the heartbeat of this team, and I think maybe more than some other superstar signings that you would do before training camp, it was important to get this done so that you had that emotional leader, first guy out on the to lead the guys out on the field and get them pumped up for that first practice and get the training camp off on the right foot immediately. I think it was important not only to the team, not only to Dez and for his financial well-being, but for the team to get their emotional leader out there early. So
and when you talk about the team, we're not only talking about the front office and the Joneses, but we're talking about the locker room.
Absolutely.
You know that entire locker room was watching those negotiations carefully because they know who the leader is, and they want to see how the leader is going to be treated by the team.
And he's earned it. So yeah,
and they know he's earned it because they're the ones who are in the weight room with him.
Exactly.
They're the ones who are there when he's getting everyone fired up, when everyone's hot and tired.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he gets taken care of, and the rest of the team can kind of breathe easy and say, okay, this team has its priorities in order. Now we can go play.
And I think the other big, big news that's come out since our last podcast is the Greg Hardy suspension was reduced down to 4 by Henderson, which, you know, we kind of anticipate. I think we actually had said that we didn't anticipate, but we said that it might be an option, but we definitely put it as the least likely option. I was quite surprised that they did do it. But I mean, it is, I think, the reasoning that we explained back then was that they did it with the hope that it would entice Hardy to not want to take them to court to reduce it any further. And I think, say what you will about the NFL, I think the 4-game reduction was the reduction to 4 games was a smart number, because I think it really is going to make, it's the number that Hardy would look at and give pause to whether he would want to go to court to, you know, risk exactly what may happen in court. Now, there's still a ton of different scenarios that can happen in court, and I've heard them anywhere from the obvious, oh, he'll get it suspended, the suspension reduced down to 2, to, oh, there might be an opportunity to actually get the punishment deferred and actually maybe even have those 2 games later in the season, which would, if you think about it, would be amazing, because just for him not to miss those first 2 games would be quite a thing. So we don't really know what's going to happen at this point yet, and Hardy's camp hasn't even come out and said yet whether or not they are going to go to court. Not. I think it would be quite brilliant by Hardy if they, you know, pulled an NFL and waited until the very last minute to put it in court, and then asked for a stay from Doty, and then maybe got the punishment pushed back to a later date than the first 2 games. But who knows if that's. I think it's legally possible, but who knows if any of that will happen. But just your thoughts on the reduction by Henderson and the potential for a reduction even further.
Well, I think just I would agree with everything you said in terms of it being a pleasant surprise and the reasons why it happened. This notion that they could defer a 2-game or even a 4-game penalty until later in the season is actually something that would benefit the Cowboys quite a lot, not only because they start the season with 2 division games, but because their first 8 games, they play against 8 above-average quarterbacks, above-average to, superb quarterbacks. And unlike, 2011, 2012, 2013, when their schedule seemed to be really backloaded, it got tougher and tougher in December. This seems to be quite the opposite. I feel like their murderer's row is the first 8 games. And you look at December, you're like, well, that's probably, given what we presume that these teams are going to be playing like, that seems to be the easiest part of their schedule. So, something where Hardy was, helped them win a lot of games early and then missed part of November and part of December might actually be more beneficial, especially given that, some of the young players might be playing better by then anyway. I think all the way around, though, it's A, fair, and B, makes a considerable difference in terms of this team's ability to be competitive against top-flight offenses, against the Patriots and the Green Bays of the world, and even the Eagles both times. Hardy's going to make a huge difference in their ability to delimit what those offenses are capable of doing.
And I think the only other information that necessarily needs to be filled in at this point is just this morning, we're recording this on Monday, to pull back the curtain a little bit, Ryan Williams and Cam Lawrence were each cut in anticipation of the team heading out to Oxnard. I don't know if they, everyone was doing their physicals today, so I don't know if, if maybe they failed their physicals or not the physicals, but the conditioning. I don't know if they, if it had anything to do with that, or if they had just kind of had enough with Ryan Williams' knee and they just decided that they were going to go a different route. You know, Cam Lawrence was not long for this world anyways, just because I'm pretty sure we signed 65 linebackers in this offseason or something like that. I mean, it just seems like we have so many linebackers that they could be playing multiple positions at this point. So he was definitely on his way out the door. As I think you even brought up in the last podcast, like the point was basically to get Cam Lawrence off the field, and now they've got him off the team. So yeah. Any extra thoughts on Ryan Williams or Cam Lawrence?
Only that this is the annual rite of summer, yeah. You know, in which they tend to trim a couple extra guys off the roster so they have space to make acquisitions. They gives them some flexibility. I think you're right. Cam Lawrence, the whole point of the offseason was to get Cam Lawrence off the roster. And I think they waited as long as they could for Ryan Williams to get healthy, and he just never could. And they finally had to cut bait, as they say.
Well, follow up to that. Do you think they have enough running backs to go through training camp at this point? Or do you think they need to sign another one?
I think they do have Lake C. Strunk, you know, and I think that they may sign another one. It wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think they're going to sign one, you know, the kind of running back where everyone's going to say, oh, there's their bell cow that they've been missing.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that guy
exists. It's just
going to
be a camp body. Yeah, it's just going to be a camp body.
Yeah. So, I think at most, maybe they sign a vet whose name you've heard before at a minimum deal just to have a camp body and see if he can do anything. But I agree. I tend to think that either they're going to get some cheap undrafted free agent, or the only other option would be to swing for the fences and make the trade. But I think if that sort of thing happens, it's going to happen later in camp after Randall and McFadden have had a chance to prove or not prove whether they can stick it as the starting running back. So that should catch us on up. Basically, the buses leave tomorrow for Oxnard, and all the whole team should be out here by tomorrow evening. So I think we should probably go ahead and get into the show. What do we have for the first episode of season two?
Well, we're going to usher in season two by welcoming David Hellman from the Mothership into the studio to gather his impressions of the Cowboys offseason, as well as his thoughts on the upcoming training camp.
Well, that sounds great. Before we get to that, let's go ahead and plug Blogging the Boys. Blogging the Boys is who puts on this fine podcast, so we want to make sure that you guys are going to their site, bloggingtheboys.com, checking them out for all your Oxnard updates. Rabble will be posting all his daily reports there and everything, and of course OCC and all our great writers will be posting all their information there. So make sure you're checking them out for training camp all the way through the preseason and, of course, in season. They'll have all your information. Follow them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter at Blogging the Boys.
So I can roll around in the rap though. Never that Cadillac, pimp, die, fish, bone, true, bone, 15. But I had to go and get two more. What's up, get buck, shake, done, killer. DJ Boop with a pole in the middle for the edge of the rest of your flexible beats. See how far these flexible gifts. Pull up the show, up the focus. The doors ain't typical when they get open. Hold up, he ain't never been sky high. Swear I could've died when I hopped on my ride. Like 4 or 5 times, no parachute. But jump for the loop. Honk a loogie at the root when I feel like. Feel like. Pouring on the screen, two holes on the scene. Tongue kissing, you would think my will die. Cadillac, let, 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 Cadillac, let, let, let. Too early for the hook.
It is my succinct pleasure to welcome the Mothership's David Hellman into the studio. David, welcome.
Tiny Jim.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate being here. Thank you.
Well, we're really, really happy to have you here. Just for all of those who are not following David religiously, which is a big mistake, he's been a staff writer at DallasCowboys.com since April 2012, where he covers the Cowboys in a variety of capacities. And he also writes pieces occasionally for Star Magazine. Which is interesting because starting this week, he'll be joining Josh Ellis on the Star Magazine's On Air show, a happy recent development for all of us who follow that show. Furthermore, the fine work of the man lovingly known as Tiny Jim can be found at Fox Sports Southwest. So obviously, with all these multiple platforms, he's extremely well positioned to talk Cowboys off-season and training camp with us. And we are thrilled to have him here. But before we get into the nitty-gritty nuts and bolts, we'd love a little quick peek behind the curtain, as it were. So how did you end up at DallasCowboys.com? You know, what is it like being in the hallowed halls of Valley Ranch every day covering the Cowboys? And I think, you know, ultimately, most importantly, how did you get the nickname Tiny Jim?
That really is the million-dollar question with me. And, you know, I'm gonna give myself away a little. It's not as good of a story as you might think it is. But okay, so that's a lot of stuff to go through. But I'll try to do my best to keep it brief. So I actually covered college sports and recruiting for ESPN.com for a little while, briefly after I got out of college. I've been out of college for coming up on 5 years soon here. And my contract with them ended. And you might remember a good friend of mine who used to work for the DallasCowboys.com staff, Rowan Kavner.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Who is now with the LA Clippers, sadly. For me, not really for him. I'm sure he's doing great. But so we worked together at the student newspaper at LSU. And, you know, he had informed me that they had had some losses on the staff and would I be interested and would he like – would I like him to put a good word in? I said, absolutely. That sounds fantastic. And he kind of put my resume in the stack that they were looking at. And next thing I know, I'm part of the process. And I interviewed with Derek Eagleton, who leads all that stuff up, and Nick Eatman, who's our head writer at DC.com. And yeah, like you said, right before the draft a couple years ago, they decided to bring me on. And I had about, 10 days to get out of New Orleans and get to Dallas and got an apartment. And next thing I know, I'm doing draft talk with Brian Broaddus and all this crazy stuff, and just kind of threw me into the deep end of the Cowboys universe, which, I mean, everybody knows the Dallas Cowboys, but I had kind of existed on the periphery. You know, it's amazing how much I've learned and gained and all that type of stuff just in the brief amount of time I've been here. So that, I guess that covers that. So then that brings us up to my first season with the team. They played in the Hall of Fame game up in Canton, Ohio, against the Miami Dolphins. And for some reason, I like to dress nice for games. It's like a look the part, be the part kind of thing. It just feels good it makes you feel official, makes you feel like you're supposed to be there.
You're up in the swagger for the whole team.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the team's in the classic whites with the seafoam shiny silver pants, and you just want to be a part of the spectacle, you know?
Plus, yeah. Dude, you were in Ohio at the time. It's the cradle of coaches. You have to dress up.
It's central. I mean, Larry Allen just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and you know, Michael Irvin's there. You know, you want to represent. So what I decided to do, even though it was August, was wear a sweater vest, which I mean you chuckle away because it was a dumb decision. I was very hot, and I'm wearing a tie, and you know, I'm at least a little bit nervous because it's my first pro football game, even if it is a preseason game. So anyway, we're in the press box, which is a high school press box. It's amazingly small and not state of the art compared to some of the places we go in the NFL. And it was before kickoff, I think, but Rowan looked at me and he kind of smirked and he said, "You look like a tiny Jim Tressel right now." And for people who might not be in the know, Jim Tressel was the Ohio State coach in the Big Ten for 10 or 15 years. And he always, always wore a sweater vest. Always. And so, you know, it was just – to me, it was just kind of like, ha-ha, you're very funny. But Brian Broaddus absolutely died. He thought it was the funniest thing that anybody had ever said ever. And he laughed about it all night, and he just kept going back to it. And it might have died, honestly, but we got back to Oxnard for the rest of training camp, and Brian relayed the story to Kelsey Charles, who is kind of our do-everything, jack-of-all-trades, radio host, social media, all-around great person. And she thought it was hilarious, and she abbreviated it to TJ and then Tej, and it just blossomed into this whole thing. And you know, I like to think I've got a great sense of humor, so I just decided, you know, you know, I might as well just steer into this skid and go along with it because they're going to call me that anyway. And, you know, here we are 2+ years later. And, like, it's kind of sick because when we go places, people will yell Tiny Jim at me or TJ. And I'll, like, look, you know, like, I answer to that now. It's crazy. I'll never forget when we were in London for the international game against the Jaguars last season. Because Broadus will call me just James. He's shortened it to just James now. And somebody said James, and they were talking to a person who's actually named James, and we both looked. And that's when I realized that it had gotten out of control. So,
well, you took your nickname like a man. We're super impressed.
I mean, like I said, I mean, if you make a stink about it, then it's
going to
be
worse. It's just
going
to be worse.
It's just worse. So here I am. I am Tiny Jim Hellman, and you know that's fine with me. It's not a big deal.
Well, that's great stuff. So let's get into the football now, shall we? Because sure. that's what full size Jim would want. You know,
I just wasted 10 minutes of everyone.
No. You didn't waste anything. We're glad that we got down to the nitty gritty of what went down. So, in the last couple of weeks, it has been kind of fashionable for people covering the Cowboys to offer rankings of the team's offseason moves. And since we are nothing if not fashionable, we thought we'd put you on the spot. What do you think are the top three moves they made this offseason?
You know, we are the blog that wears the sweater vest.
I appreciate that. I think number one, purely from a cost effectiveness standpoint, I'd probably have to say, and just a straight out like swagger, awesome way to go standpoint, is the decision to go get Lyle Collins after the draft. I don't even know if he's going to start this year, but you just got a top 10, top 15 capable of starting somewhere talent for $1.6 million. I mean, you know, they're paying him pennies compared to what he'd be getting if he had been drafted where he was supposed to go. And just the way they did it, you know, I know they downplayed it after Collins signed, but you know, selling him on how good this line could be, and they'll find a spot for him in the future, or maybe even this year if he impresses in camp, who knows. But I mean, when you can get a guy that good on a deal that cheap, that's just fantastic team management. So that would be one. And then the two big ones, I think you could probably, I'll put Dez number two just because of what he means. I mean, he's a face of the franchise type guy. I think he's certainly top two, top three receiver in the league, if not number one. I would still probably lean toward Megatron in 2015, but I mean, you can't argue with his production and getting him locked down, making sure he's happy and ready to be the heartbeat and the, you know, everything that he is from an emotional as well as gameplay standpoint. That's big. And then especially now that his suspension has been reduced to 4 games, you know, how can you argue with going to get a Greg Hardy with 27 sacks in his last 2 seasons? Obviously, it comes with all kinds of baggage, and that's a completely different debate. But there's no arguing that the pass rush is one of the biggest problems with this team. And when you combine him with the decision to draft Randy Gregory, I mean, you can't fault him for trying. They're definitely trying to upgrade this thing and make it ferocious. And it starts with getting a guy as good as Greg Hardy and having him be available for 12 games. So I think those are probably the big three.
And, you know, I've been talking to folks and saying, Stephen Jones came out in, what, January, February, and told you guys, our offseason priority is to upgrade the pass rush. He made a public declaration. And then they went out and got the best pass rusher who was available in free agency. And I think they got the best 4-3 defensive end available in the draft. If you make that your public declaration, how can you do any better than that?
You know?
I mean, they killed it. I mean, they basically said this is line item one. And then they went ahead and did everything possible. So, I agree. I think that's a huge move. So I guess the follow up question then now needs to be, was there, you know, on the opposite side of the fence, was there a worst move or a non-move? Or do you see some important unfinished business that the team still has to attend to here as they kind of figure out their roster through camp?
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm beating this drum by myself. If you read the stuff I write or listen to me wherever, whenever, this is something I bring up a lot. And, you know, maybe I'll be proved wrong, and we're about to leave for training camp, so this is where I will be proved wrong if I am wrong. But I really thought running back was something that they needed to take a harder look at. And like you just said, it's hard for me to fault them for drafting Randy Gregory because he is such a talented guy. And if they can, you know, coach him into – I mean, the ceiling is very high for that guy. So it's hard for me to sit here and say that was a bad decision, especially at number 60, which is where they got him in the draft. At the same time, I mean, Tevin Coleman, who everybody was so high on during the draft process – some people thought he was maybe even a first-round caliber running back. He was still available when Randy Gregory went off the board. Duke Johnson was sitting there. So, you know, they had options to really boost this running back core. And like I said, I mean, Darren McFadden could be healthy, and he's a dynamic player when he is. And I do think Joseph Randall's a quality player. I don't know if I trust that for a variety of reasons. And then, you know, if one or both of them gets hurt, then you're really in dire straits. So that's the thing that worries me. And when I think about this team, that's what gives me the most pause is we all saw what it meant to this offense to have a workhorse running back, you know, in the latter half of 2013 and all of last year. And I'm not convinced that they have that right now. Again, I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm totally happy to eat crow, but that's just how I'm feeling here in July.
I think a lot of us are feeling the same thing. You know, I think that's, you know, that's the one question that's going to keep a lot of us, you know, even if the defense looks much better, I think it's going to keep a lot of Cowboy fans, you know, feeling kind of anxious. Yeah, so speaking, I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, speaking of running back, you know, when the national writers in particular have been analyzing the Cowboys offseason, a lot of them have been focused pretty much on two things. You know, who the Cowboys acquired, and you enumerated some of those guys. And the thing we're hearing the most of is, you know, the loss of DeMarco Murray. But one of the things that then is not being covered much that I think is and actually a sort of underrated development is the fact that Murray was not the only one of their, you know, 16 unrestricted free agents who signed with another team. So, you know, on offense, they lost some pretty key contributors, guys who made big plays in 2014. They lost Dwayne Harris and Jeremy Parnell, and they lost five members of the defensive front seven. They lost Henry Melton, Anthony Spencer. They lost George Selvey, and then linebackers Bruce Carter and Justin Durant. You know, and I've spent some time in this offseason, you know, watching games from 2014 again. And, you know, again and again, so, you know, a Selvey will make a big play against the Seahawks to cause a punt, or, you know, the first eight games, you know, Henry Melton made a lot of plays. And so this made me think of this question. You know, these guys did make some pretty important contributions. So which of these guys do you think the Cowboys will miss most in 2015, and why?
Oh, man. I mean, like you said, there's so many choices because so many guys left. I think my first instinct would honestly be to say Justin Durant, but I don't buy that even as I say it, because he had so many injury issues. And also between Sean Lee, Anthony Hitchens, and Rolando McClain, you think those guys can probably pick up the slack. I was so impressed by the way he played over the first, you know, 5 or 6 weeks of last season. And if they had been able to get 12 or 13 games out of him, you know, playing that way, I think it would have made a huge difference. I know Dwayne Harris is probably a popular answer, and if he played the way he did in 2013, I would pick him. Not that he was bad in 2014, but I think there was a little bit of a drop off.
Yeah, his returns certainly didn't seem as explosive in 14 as they were in 13.
Yeah, and I mean, luckily for them, I mean, you got guys like Jeff Heath who can fill that void. And obviously, I mean, the big question is who handles punt and kick returns. Yeah, I mean, but honestly, I think I'm sitting here, I'm spitballing, but Dwayne is probably still the guy just because of how much he did, you know? I mean, he's your fifth receiver. He's not obviously not contributing that much. But he does that. He returns kicks. He returns punts. He's your best gunner. He's all over the place in coverage. And I mean, that's an undersold point, I think, is just how good this team has been covering kicks since Rich Bisaccia got here. I mean, they haven't allowed a touchdown since I've covered the team, which is pretty nice.
Is that right?
When you're not giving up scores like that, it's a big deal. So just by virtue of his, you know, versatility, I would probably go Dwayne. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of role players on that defense, and hey, I mean, your 2014 interceptions leader was Bruce Carter.
I was gonna say Bruce Carter probably has to be pretty high on that list too.
I feel like a lot of people would agree.
He was so up and down.
He was never a guy that you could count on to really ball out, which makes me hesitant to tab him as a guy that they absolutely can't replace. Especially, like I said, I mean. Obviously, Rolando McClain won't be there for the first month, but between McClain, Lee, Hitchens, and then Jasper Brinkley, who they brought in free agency, I don't sit there and you know, sure, throw in Damian Wilson for good measure, the fourth round draft pick this year. I don't sit there and lose sleep about losing those two guys, even though, you know, they did definitely make an impact last year.
And I think it's going to be a lot of Hitchens taking his spot. I mean, because Hitchens probably will start out at Sam where Carter was playing, and Hitchens probably have a couple more special teams responsibilities. I mean, I think that's one thing that got underrated about Bruce Carter is that he was a really good special teams player. I was watching the Chicago game, I think it was last night, and he got his hand on a punt, and I forgot how good he was at that, like, you know, rushing the punter and getting in there and getting making the punter hurry off his kicks.
Yeah, there's two guys that I always like. Bruce Carter was like one step away from blocking like six punts. Yeah. And Tyrone Crawford was about eight combined steps away from having a 10 sack season. Like, he was just always that guy who was planting the quarterback just as he got the ball off.
They wrested Anthony Spencer's almost Anthony title from him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Too close, Tyrone.
Too close, Tyrone. Right. I like that. Yeah. Well, it's too bad he's gone. Or no, he's not. We can still call him Too Close, Tyrone, until he starts getting some sacks. As someone who attended all of the OTA and minicamp practices that were open to the media, you represent a rare source of information for us. So what were some of your impressions from these 6 weeks of practices, and were there any standouts or any guys who need to up their game, in your opinion?
Yeah, I've got a couple. I think my main impression, and I kind of touched on this when we started, you know, we went into OTAs and it's like really exciting. You know, Lyle Collins is this first round. And hey, I went to LSU, so nobody would love for me to see him succeed. Nobody would love to see him succeed more than I would. But it's shorts and shirts. I understand that it's not real football, but Ron Leary, both in play and demeanor, like, he doesn't look like a guy who's intent on just letting the rookie take that job the way that Travis Frederick and Zach Martin did. I mean, it's easy to jump to that conclusion because those two guys did that so effortlessly. But Ron Leary's been a two-year starter, and he's been pretty good. I mean, Brian Broaddus will tell you how good his tape was when he played J.J. Watt last fall. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, you know, a lot of people see that Lyle Collins is on the team and they assume he's going to push for a starting job. I'm not sure Ron Leary is going to let it go so easily. And then the same, you know, in the same way, you know, they draft Chaz Green, top 100 pick. You assume he's probably a favorite to be the swing tackle since they lost Jeremy Parnell. And then Darian Weems, who's a four-year veteran that people love to forget about because he's hurt so often, he had a great spring, and he really kind of made it seem like he's the favorite to have that job. Obviously, you assume Doug Freeze, your starting right tackle, once he comes back from injury. But, you know, I would have said that these rookies would be showing out, and it was really the veterans that were more impressive in these practices. And then the other one is, I mean, you know, I thought it was a great pick when they made it, and we all know about his athleticism, but Byron Jones is just an impressive-looking kid. I mean, he is super – like, again, I don't need to tell anybody that he's super athletic because he set the world record for the broad jump. But, you know, they're playing him at safety. They're playing him at cornerback. He's moving all over the formation, making acrobatic catches. You know, him and Witten kind of had a little tussle during one of the OTAs because he broke up a pass and Witten thought he interfered. There was no flag. And, you know, again, like I said, I mean, it's two-hand touch basically, but he looked like what you want your 27 overall pick to look like. So I'm excited to see him get out there and go one-on-one with these receivers. I mean, him and Dez Bryant going one-on-one in training camp should be nonstop fun.
How about any guys who need to pick up their game a little? Anyone looking like they're kind of lagging during those mini camps?
I don't know about Well, and I mean, he's a good candidate. Well, he got himself suspended, so there's that. But I'm curious. I'm very curious to see what the Cowboys are going to get out of Rolando McClain this year, because, I mean, he came on like gangbusters last year, and he was this dominant physical force in the middle for 7 or 8 games. And then it just kind of seemed like he was hanging on and trying to stay healthy. And I mean, you can watch those games. And after he got hurt playing, I think it was Arizona, he didn't look like the same player, you know, the same guy that made that amazing pick against Tennessee and had all these physical hits. And now, you know, he got his knee scoped in the spring. He really wasn't a factor in the spring at all. And now we know he's not going to be there for a month. So I'm wondering, you know, how much is this guy going to be available to practice? How much are they going to let him run with the ones in training camp? And how ready is he going to be? And, you know, it makes sense why they gave him such an incentive-based contract back in free agency, because I'm not sure they trust him at all. And we haven't seen a whole lot of reason why they should in 2015. So I'm interested to see how that plays out.
What would you put the percentage chance of him making the team at right now?
Oh, I'm pretty confident he'll make the team unless yeah. Unless, you know, his injury is much worse than anticipated or things just go really south. I think, again, I mean, the glimpse that we got, not even a glimpse. I mean, he was a great physical player for 7 or 8 games, for half the season last year. And I think the knowledge that he can be that good is going to keep him around. You know, I mean, yeah, Anthony Hitchens is good. Obviously, they brought in Jasper Brinkley, but I think Rolando's ceiling is that much higher. And he's not costing you a roster spot while he's suspended anyway, so I don't see a good reason why they would let him go, you know, unless something drastic comes up.
I gotcha. So we're going to shift gears slightly here, from talking about the Cowboys to talking about the division in which they play, the NFC East. Ooh. So one of your many duties at DallasCowboys.com is to update fans on what's going on with the other NFC East teams, the rivals. And so we've just been talking about the Cowboys offseason. We'd like to take a look around the division, if you don't mind, at how our hated rivals offseasons have gone as well. So how have the Eagles, Giants, and Redskins fared since January, in your opinion?
Man, and like, I know Cowboys fans don't want to hear it, but I'm not sure there's a more interesting team in the NFL right now than the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, just all the crazy stuff that they've done. I mean, they traded away a Pro Bowl quarterback for a guy who's torn his ACL twice. They went and signed their biggest rival's running back, who had one of the best seasons in NFL history, but also accumulated 500 carries in the process. They drafted a great young wide receiver to go with an already pretty solid receiving core. Actually, they let their other star receiver, Jeremy Maclin, go in free agency. It's like a nonstop rotating cast. I remember back in the spring, I read a story about how sporting goods stores in Philly weren't willing to stock jerseys because they weren't sure if the players were going to stick around.
Yeah, no one wanted Bradford jerseys because they were all sure that he was going to be a key trade piece to try to get Mariota.
It seems like ancient history, yeah, but there was that giant smokescreen about the Eagles wanting to get Marcus Mariota. So, I mean, Chip Kelly's either going to look like an evil genius who is better than every other coach in the NFL, or the Eagles are going to fall flat on their face. And I'm not sure there's much in between. Like, I have a hard time seeing this team like being mediocre, you know? Like, they're either going to be awesome or it's going to be awful. So one way or the other. And there's really no way to predict it until we see it. So that's really fascinating. The Giants really intrigue me. I know it's, you know, for them, it's bad that, you know, they lost Will Beatty there pretty early on in the offseason program. But, you know, they have Pugh, who they drafted a couple years ago. Obviously, again, as an LSU guy, like, it's funny. Like, I love watching Odell Beckham. He's so much fun. But, you know, nobody that follows me wants to hear that because I'm a Cowboys writer. So, I mean, you know, he's a dynamic young player. And it's kind of the same thing as the Cowboys a couple years ago, really, before they reinvigorated this offensive line. It's like, yeah, there's question marks. But, you know, love him or hate him, Eli Manning is a better quarterback than most. I mean, there are only a handful of teams in the league that would not, you know, want to acquire him. And, you know, one way or another, I think they can make it work. I expect them not – I don't expect them to be, like, great, but I do expect them to be more competitive than they have been in recent years where, you know, they were out of the race and kind of – you know, I think they lost, like, 7 games in a row at one point last year. And then the Red – I don't – the Redskins are – it's just I don't see it, which – I'm going to be totally honest with y'all. Don't take my opinions too seriously, everyone, because I thought they were really going to bounce back last year and RG3 was going to rediscover his rookie form, and it did not work out that way. So, I see it being a 3-team race with the Redskins substantially bringing up the rear for another year. But I did think it was – I mean, I laughed to myself – what was the kids – they drafted Brandon Scherff.
Yeah.
And they – like Leonard Williams, I think. I mean, a lot of people considered him the best player in the draft last year, was still on the board.
Yeah.
And they went and got, you know, what a lot of people consider was the best offensive lineman. And I think any Cowboys fan probably should have chuckled at that because it looked a lot like the Redskins trying to copy the Cowboys blueprint, which hey, maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. But I don't think it's going to happen in 2015. But now that I've said that, watch him start out 8-0 or something crazy like that.
You know, I have to say, the Redskins are so dysfunctional. You know, it's hard to imagine that they're going to suddenly be good. But if we were to rank the GMs in the division,
yeah, that's
let's assume that Will McClay is a GM, right?
Yeah.
In terms of this ranking, I think you'd have to put Scott McClure in second.
That's a really, I mean, it's a solid point. And yeah, I mean.
And frankly, you know, if you're going on resume, you may have to put him as first.
Yeah, honestly. I mean, he helped build both those 49ers and Seahawks teams.
Yeah.
It does, you know, you can laugh at it as a Cowboys fan, but it reads a lot like what the Cowboys, you know, passing on the gaudy, flashy pick to make a responsible one, and you know, you pair him with Williams up there who's playing left tackle. The left tackles in this division are absolutely amazing.
They're the best.
Oh, they're nasty. Yeah.
Probably got the three best.
Maybe they're putting the building blocks down. And that's the great thing about the NFL is I always think that's so funny is fans talk on Twitter or at the bar in like May and you know they'll laugh at you about like the Redskins could ever be good, but like some team that people think is terrible is going to be in the wild card race this year. Like
a
that
couple is, of them probably.
Yeah. It's a given. And, you know, and Cowboys fans don't want to hear this. I don't think the Cowboys are going to fall out of the playoff race. Cause I think they're built properly, but somebody that you think is going to be good. I mean, who saw the Saints being terrible last year? I mean, it happens every single year.
Who saw the Cowboys being good last year?
Hey, I picked them to go 6-10. So again,
So did I, my friend.
It makes this league great.
I'll clean the egg off your face if you'll clean the egg off mine.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
I think the interesting thing is that, you know, I mean, it's still a quarterback driven league and that's why it's so, you know, it's easy to say, I think the Redskins are a couple years away. I mean, I think that they've got a great structure and maybe they're starting to finally head in the right place. And I'm willing to at least admit that with the offseason they've had. I think that they've at least made some decent steps and are trying to get back on the road of responsibility. But, you know, ultimately, I kind of chuckled when you said that you thought that the Eagles were the most interesting team. Not because I don't agree with you. It's just that I remember the Cowboys being called the most interesting team a couple times in a couple years past, and it was never really when they were that great. It was always when a lot of things were going on and a lot of distractions. And it should be interesting to see, you know, even with this being a quarterback league, you know, Chip Kelly is good at kind of giving those quarterbacks a crutch, but I mean, he may need to literally give Bradford a crutch.
Yeah,
Game 8, even. So it should be interesting to see. I agree. I hate the Eagles, but I am fascinated to see how all this plays out with them.
They could be a really fascinating dumpster fire, or they could be a really fascinating playoff contender. Like I mean, I think both are possible. And yeah, like you said, I mean, if there's a guy who can coax some production out of Sam Bradford, you know, Chip Kelly seems like a decent bet. So,
considering all of that, who would you list as your division favorite, and who would you list as your, I guess, dark horse candidate to win the NFC East?
I think the Cowboys have to be considered the favorite. I think they have the least amount of question marks. I think they have, you know, I'm not going to get into that debate, but I like Tony Romo is playing better than Eli Manning right now. Obviously, Eli Manning has the two Super Bowl rings. That's okay. People can argue about that on Twitter forever, but it's hard to argue about what Tony Romo did last year and what he's looking like going into 2015. He's got the best line. The defense, like we said, they did everything you can ask of them to try to improve it, and he's got the best receiver. So, you know, I have to consider them the favorites. And like I said, maybe I'll have egg on my face again this year, but I really expect the Giants to be a lot more competitive than they have been. I think they'll be in the wild card race at least. You know, everybody thinks it's kind of this two horse race between the Eagles and Cowboys, but I wouldn't forget about them. I think they'll turn it around from how dire it was late last year for them, for sure.
You certainly can't count out Super Bowl winners. You know, like, I mean, they, like, you certainly, like, if they still have a good coach and a good quarterback, you're never really completely out of it. And I agree.
Exactly. And the 2014-2015 Giants remind me a lot of those, you know, 8-8, 6-10 Cowboys teams with Romo. You know, like, you've got a good enough quarterback to keep you in any game, but not a good enough team to, you know, secure a lot of wins. So that'll be interesting to watch for sure.
Well, kind of along those lines, we know that team building in the NFL is a year-to-year proposition, which is why, you know, you never know. So instead of asking where this team is better than the one that lost to the Packers in January, it's probably more proper to ask, how do you think this Cowboys roster compares to the one that began camp just about a year ago?
Good question. It's funny because I think top to bottom, they're probably better. And that's, you know, it's really interesting. A fantastic way to look at a team is like, go look at players 43 through 53. And all of us, like, those guys are pretty good for the Cowboys. Like, they're gonna let some pretty good players go.
Don't start jumping ahead at our questions, David. Later on for sure.
I think this is a better roster top to bottom, but, you know, not to beat a dead horse, which I do all the time anyway, but, you know, there isn't a running back on this roster who I think is anywhere near as good as DeMarco Murray. So that gives me pause. But everywhere else, I think you'd have to say it's upgraded for sure.
Well, let me actually ask a kind of follow-up question along those lines, because I think we all recognize that the Cowboys – one of the reasons the Cowboys surprised us last year is because so many things went right, but also because the way they were built, there was really only one formula, at least earlier in the year when Roma wasn't playing lights out, for them to win, which was to dominate time of possession, not turn the ball over terribly much, keep the defense off the field, et cetera. And that obviously relied so much on DeMarco Murray. And the Cowboys have stated that they want to win that way this year too, that they want to be committed, quote unquote, committed to the run. You know, we heard some rumors in the spring that they had expressed interest or maybe done some talking with some other teams for, who might be releasing quality running backs. Do you think that the Cowboys are just basically waiting to see what happens in training camp, but are sort of have their finger on the running back trade trigger? Like, where given the primacy of that position to their winning formula?
Yeah, I mean, and I've been, you know, it's another great opportunity for me to either be right or wrong. I mean, I'm not going to go as far as to predict it, but I really won't be surprised if a running back who's not on the team right now will be, when it's all said and done. I don't think their fingers on the trigger, because I think, you know, whoever you want, I mean, Will McClay, Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, Jason Garrett, I think that they believe in the guys that are going to camp. But I think they want to see it, you know, and I think maybe the finger's not on the trigger, but I mean, you know, I was reading earlier today, a report came out that Chris Johnson's agent had been in contact with the Cowboys, which why wouldn't he be? Because Chris Johnson needs a job.
Surprised he's not parked out in front of Valley Ranch.
Yeah, no, I would be. I would like walk from wherever Chris Johnson lives right. to Valley
with a,
Ranch.
With a sandwich billboard.
Yeah. But, you know, I think Stephen Jones said it himself. It was the spring. I don't even remember how long ago it was. But he said Chris Johnson's name is on a list that they have. That, you know, they have a list of candidates that if somebody gets hurt or if somebody's not getting the job done, you know, they've got guys that they can call. And I think that's probably in somebody's back pocket. And, you know, maybe we get out to camp and watch a couple weeks of practice and they play the Chargers and the 49ers and we'll see where they are. And maybe they're satisfied that Randall and McFadden are the way to go, and maybe they're not. Unfortunately, there's no way to get further than that without watching how this plays out. So I don't think they're like about to make a move, but I do think it's on their mind.
Who do you think is at the top of that list?
I think you have to throw out Chris Johnson. I think, honestly, I'll go ahead and say it. I'm reluctant to even say this because, like, I don't want, you know, I don't know anything that anybody doesn't, but Ray Rice is probably on that list if I had to guess, which for me as a reporter would just be a whole can of worms. So for a variety of reasons, I hope that doesn't come to pass. But, you know, I this is the NFL. I mean, if you can take a look at Greg Hardy, you can probably take a look at Ray Rice too. Again, I mean, not to, you know, I hope nobody's like running to Twitter to attribute that to me. I don't have any inside information, but I wouldn't be surprised. And then, you know, maybe you trade for somebody. I mean, because, you know, the guys that you can get as free agents, are they really significant upgrades over McFadden and Randall? I don't know. So maybe you have to trade some draft picks or something to get your guy. And that's exactly why, you know, I don't think something is imminently on the horizon, because they're going to need to be convinced that they need to get better before they're going to do something like that. Just it kind of reminds me of, if you remember 2 years ago, the Brian Waters saga, where yeah. that was kind of talked about all the way through training camp and it didn't really come to pass. I mean, the team was back in Dallas before mm-hmm. that got finalized. So, you know, if something were to happen, I think it would be another situation like that, where it's in the final days before the season finally starts.
I think I'm going to be keeping my eyes on the situation in Seattle as well, because I think that, you know, assuming that, you know, the top two guys remain the top two guys there, then that means that maybe someone like a Thomas Rawls or a Christine Michael might be let go.
Yeah.
You know, so exactly. Teams that have a little bit of depth. I know. And I think either of those guys might be able to help the Cowboys.
You guys are – I have very little doubt that you guys saw about Kristen Michaels retweeting that, that you know, they should trade him to Dallas or something like that. I think it happened over the weekend.
Really? Actually, I didn't hear that.
Oh, I get to be the bearer.
You scooped us. Wow.
Yeah. I don't even
– For the 3,000th time.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently, he retweeted that. My job is to be a professional loser, by the way. Like, I just look at Twitter the time.
We're semi-professional losers. I don't know who you're talking to.
Yeah, so. At least you're getting paid for your loserdom. Exactly. We're amateur losers.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess there's a silver lining in everything. But, Kristen Michael retweeted somebody saying he should be traded to the Cowboys or something. So, yeah, I mean, it's not going to be the Adrian Peterson, like, mother of all blockbusters. It's going to be somebody like a Kristen Michael that, you know, maybe a lot of Cowboys fans haven't even heard of. But
Niall
he can
Davis,
certainly
– maybe, too.
Oh yeah, Niall Davis is another. I mean, it's something like that. Where is it feasible to attain him, and can he help the team? And if the answer is yes to both, then maybe you might see it happen.
All right, so let's switch gears and talk a little bit now about some other things that are on the horizon, specifically training camp. So here you are, you're getting ready to, or you're actually in the middle of packing for Oxnard as we speak. When you get there. Which training camp battles are you most looking forward to watching? And in some ways, this is a two-parter because it has to do with position battles. So which position battles are you most eagerly anticipating? And not necessarily even for starting roles. And then which one-on-one skirmishes, position versus position, are you looking forward to?
Exciting stuff. I mean, I gave some of this away. I mean, I know I just said that I think Ron Leary will probably keep his job, but – I think they're going to give the first round talent every opportunity to take a look there. So I am interested to see. And again, what we saw in May was shorts and shirts. So I'm excited to see Lyle Collins get in some pads and see them work. And I'm sure he's going to get some first team looks over the course of the month that we're there. So maybe he pushes Ron Leary. So, I mean, that's obviously something you're going to look for when a guy with first round talent is joining the offensive line. And I'm fascinated to see what they're going to do with Byron Jones, because they played him everywhere. So, I mean, what do you, is he going to push JJ Wilcox for a safety job? Is he going to push for a top three cornerback job? And then, you know, Orlando Scandrick is, you know, arguably the best slot corner in the league. So is Byron Jones pushing for a job on the outside with Brandon Carr? Who's his main competition? Is it Mo Claiborne? What about Corey White, who's got several seasons under his belt? So that's really interesting. And honestly, you know, any rookie, like, I'm not just going to give him a job right off the bat just because he's a first round pick. But Byron Jones looked that athletic and that impressive that I really do believe he can make some serious noise as a rookie. So that's exciting. And then, again, I'll just ride that train a little further. I mean, the one-on-one receiver DB battles are just absolutely the most fun part of training camp. I mean, Dez talks more trash than anyone. Scandrick is a huge trash talker. And the stuff that they can do in these red zone and goal line situations is absolutely amazing. And we actually get to stand right up on it, you know, 5 feet away and almost get killed by these guys. So that's always really exciting stuff. And then I'm really interested, because I'll even admit it, I was at least a little bit critical of the Randy Gregory pick. Not just, I mean, whatever you want to throw out there between the off-field stuff and the fact that I thought they needed a running back and the fact that I'm not sure, you know, how physically ready he'll be to play 4-3 end. I can't wait to see that guy go against Tyron Smith and Doug Free in pads. I think that'll be a lot of fun too. So he got a lot of good reviews in OTAs when he wasn't wearing pads. So when the pads go on, I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you kind of anticipated this question earlier, but this is our final one. The camp news will likely be dominated by plays made or not made, as it were, by Romo's and Hardy's and the roster. But as fully immersed fans, we are not just interested in what happens to the bottom five guys on the 53-man roster. We are as interested in the bottom five guys as we are in the top five. So what under-the-radar camp stories might we be wise to look out for, and anything in particular you'll be covering?
You know what's fun is, like, and I get the spirit of the question, but, like, if you're listening to this podcast, and I, like, you two guys, obviously, like, I doubt that I can tell you anything you don't already know. You know, like, I know that y'all are, you know, the people listening to this are going to be diehard Cowboys fans who are after their fix. So I'll do my best. I mean, and I didn't mention in that last segment, but I think this is as excited as I've ever been for a number five wide receiver battle, especially. that's so dumb sounding because, I mean, Dwayne Harris had, like, I don't know, 17 catches last year, something so minute that it's not even worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. But here they gave George Farmer a $60,000 signing bonus, and Nick Harwell looked really good in the spring. And Lucky Whitehead is a return specialist, and he looks shifty and dynamic. And there's somebody else that I'm forgetting, I think. Deontay Greenberry, who I should throw him out there as another guy who really stood out during OTAs just because he was always making really physical, hard, tough catches. So you got a lot of candidates, and wide receiver is damn near set in stone. I mean, you got Terrence. Cole's not going anywhere. And then I have a hard time believing they're going to part ways with Devin Street as a fifth-round pick after one season. So, you know, the only way more than one of these guys make it is if they decide to carry two receivers, six total, which I don't know that they would. So that's fascinating. And then another one that I'm really curious about is, I mean, your top three ends are probably pretty set, especially when Hardy comes back. I mean, Greg Hardy, Jeremy Mincy, DeMarcus Lawrence, and then you got Randy Gregory, who's probably going to play primarily right end just because that they want him to rush the passer. That's what they want him to do. But then, you know, there's a spot for another left end there, and you got a handful of guys who are pretty cool candidates. I mean, you got Jack Crawford, who looked good in brief, you know, before he got hurt. His last game when he played in London was fantastic. Spent a fifth-round pick on Ryan Russell, and then probably my pet cat of the entire roster.
You're not alone.
Yeah, I know. Ben Gardner.
Yep.
Who, I mean, he was just a stud at Stanford. I mean, he was an all-conference player. He's obviously had a lot of injury problems. Dude is – and one of the perks of my job is I get to see these guys in the weight room on occasion. It's not like I hang out in there. But dude's gotten jacked. I mean, he's big. He is definitely – he kind of reminds me of – last year I was always continually blown away at Tyrone Crawford and how he was always in the gym, always working out. And I feel the same way about Gardner. And it's, I mean, I'm, you know, I could see him getting cut and immediately getting like snatched up by another team that wants him. So last year we didn't even get to watch him practice because his injury happened almost as soon as we got to training camp. So I'm excited if all of the, and yeah, I mean, I know he's a popular player for a lot of diehard Cowboys fans who really pay attention to those roster battles. So I'm very intrigued to see if the substance lives up to the hype, because I mean, if you went by what people say on Twitter, this guy's a Pro Bowler already. So I'm excited to finally see him get on the field.
I hate to put his name in this company, but he has reached Matt Johnson level of unseen legend.
Absolutely. I mean, there, and you know, Matt Johnson had if Ben Gardner gets hurt this camp, then it's going to be a much more apt comparison. But for sure, I mean, there's all – and I understand it. I mean, there's always that guy who, like, his potential is just so intriguing. And that's – I mean, I'm very excited to see him. And I think he's going to give those guys a tough test for one of those defensive end jobs for sure.
Let's go back to the Tyrone Crawford comparison. I think I like that one better than the Matt Johnson. But speaking of hardcore fans, we did want to follow up one more fun question. What's the weirdest fan interaction you've seen or experienced since you've been covering the Cowboys?
Ooh, I haven't seen anything too crazy. I was telling – it's fun. Like, I don't get recognized in public all the time, but it happens in like the most random environments. Like when I'm at McDonald's, like somebody will just tap me on the shoulder and be like, "Hey, like you're David Hellman." And it's just like, I'm focused on like ordering my number 4 with cheese, you know? And I'm just like, "Oh, hey, nice. Thank you. Nice to meet you." But it changes dramatically. I mean, when we go out on the road, I mean, I'm sure you guys are well aware of how insane and huge and awesome and passionate the Cowboys fan base is. Like that. I mean, I'm from New Orleans. I grew up a Saints fan, and I've always known about the Cowboys. They're America's team. Yada yada yada. And it, like I said, it just like I knew all that, but I didn't really assign much to it. But it's, I mean. When we get to the hotel in Nashville, there's 100 Cowboys fans, and when we get to the hotel in Seattle, there's 500 Cowboys fans. Like they're crazy, and they all know who we are. And I don't mean the team when me and Nick and Broadus and Rob. Like they know our names, and I've had people ask me for my autograph.
One of the funniest things in the videos that, you know, that Mickey's been doing those videos of them driving out. And it's just so funny to see Mickey sit down at a table with Emery signing autographs,
signing footballs
and autographs. And I'm just like, God, that's so weird. But it's
Mickey's a living legend.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know,
a fan tagged me in a photo that he took with Mickey, and he was like, I got to meet one of my idols today. And I just was, and like, no offense, I mean, Mickey's fantastic.
Absolutely.
But I was like, oh my God, like people assign us idol status. Like, yeah. That's so crazy to me. Yeah. And I mean, I get it. Mickey's covered the team for like 25, 20, 30 years.
He might have been there longer than Landry.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I like in a lot of ways, like I know what I do. It's a special job. Like I'm very happy and privileged to have it. But like in my day to day life, you know, I wake up and I put on work clothes and I like make a cup of coffee and like I sit in an office just like 80% of America. Like in a lot of ways, on a lot of days, my job is not that different from any other office job. But then I see stuff like that and I'm like, oh, man, like you got to stop and like take stock of like how cool and crazy and special it really is.
Well, it seems to me that one of the other ways in which it's cool and crazy and special is when you leave your cubicle where you're cranking out another story, right? You can run into any number of either people, you know, from the front office or players in the hallway. So what's that like? And like can you share any like cool stuff you've seen in the hallways or interactions or even just sort of what it's like?
Yeah. So, like I said, I mean, by and large, like 85% of the time, Valley Ranch is, I mean, it's a lot. I mean, it's an office and there's a payroll department and, you know, there's an accounting department and PR and marketing and like all these other departments that exist at every other office job. So like in a lot of ways, it's just like that. And especially during the off season, when the team's not there, you could work there. Like, I mean, if it weren't for all the football stuff all over the walls, you would have no idea, you know, and like you see Jenny from accounting on your way to the fridge to get a bottle of water and it's just totally normal. But then, you know, and especially, you know, during the season, obviously, like you just always kind of have to be on guard because like you'll be walking to the fridge or walking to the bathroom and, you know, the DBs are on their way to their DB meeting with Coach Henderson. And like, they're just all walking together and talking and like, you know, you just totally unprepared for that. But there's like Brandon Carr, like, oh, hey, what's up, dude? Like, wasn't expecting to bump into you there. And then it's funny because, our office in Valley Ranch is, I guess the nearest office to us would be the video department. Like the guys who put together the, you know, the game, the stuff that they watch, you know, mm-hmm. like their cut-ups and their put it on their iPads and you can watch the All 22 and all that good stuff. And players don't leave. I mean, the locker room and the meeting rooms and like all the stuff that the players do is separate from us, you know, like they don't need to come up there if they don't have to. And so a lot of times guys will like come into our office thinking that's where the video department is. So like I'm sitting at my laptop, like writing a story, like probably listening to some music, like not paying attention at all. And all of a sudden, you know, some rookie or some new signing is like tapping me on the shoulder, asking me if I can help him put film on his laptop. like it happened with Chaz Green this past spring after he got drafted. He needed help. Like he wasn't sure where to go. And I was like, all right, I'll show you. Don't worry. But now I know. But when I was first starting out, I was like, dude, I only know how to get to my office. Like, I wish I could. I don't actually know. So it's just like, yeah, it's just quirky little stuff like that. Like you turn a corner and there's Jerry and you're like, oh, hey, Mr. Jones, what's going on? Like, and he's just walking from his office to see somebody else. Like he's not doing anything important. It's just a day at the office, but it just so happens to be where all the Cowboys work.
All right.
Is the football stuff for the most part off limits? I mean, like, is there like a kind of non-permeable barrier beyond which you guys are told not to go because that's where the quote unquote football stuff is happening?
Well, it varies. I mean, obviously during the season, we're back there all the time. We need to be to go to the locker room and go to practice and all that good type of stuff. But yeah, I mean, especially like during the off season, there's kind of an understanding that's the player space and I'm not hanging out back there on a regular basis, you know, but it's not like somebody's going to like yell at me and throw me out of there, you know, like it's just kind of understood that's where the players are and I don't need to be there unless it's merited by work basically.
All right, so I got one last question just along these lines, and then we'll let you go. But, you know, I've always been fascinated with the idea of, you know, we've both been longtime listeners to the Talking Cowboys and Lunch Break and On Air. You know, and it's always fascinated me, this element of, you know, the walls talking and you know, you guys kind of getting inside information. I mean, obviously Broaddus, having worked in the building in the scouting department, obviously has guys that he knows in the scouting department. And that's clearly where he kind of gets his, you know, walls talking information. But I'm just wondering in general, like when you guys, if you guys do get information that is not necessarily privy to everybody else, is it, do you guys have relationships with certain coaches or certain scouts? Are there certain people that are maybe more likely to answer a question? And you don't have to necessarily give us names or anything. I'm just wondering if it's kind of a general thing, or if you're usually just going to the same guys to maybe get like a question answered, that sort of thing. Or is it just the kind of thing where you may be even kind of a tool of the football department, where they're coming to you to clear something up through the media, and they're using you as a mouthpiece?
I would call it a stigma. That's something like we have to fight against that all the time. You guys might remember this. So in the spring, Rob and I wrote like dueling columns about whether or not they should try to get Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
And it caused quite a storm, you know, like it was a big deal. And you know, like people in Minneapolis were writing columns about us.
Oh, yeah. They were talking about the tampering. That was the thing. Yeah. They were talking about tampering. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Seriously, it was just like an idea. Like me and Rob were just talking about it. And he was like, yeah, I'll write like the pro column. Like, I think it would be a good idea. And I was like, I don't think it would be a good idea. So we didn't ask anybody for their permission, and we just kind of did it, you know. And all of a sudden, I'm reading these stories that are like, well, the team's official website said, you know, they wouldn't put this on their website without express consent from Jerry Jones or, you know, whoever, Jason Garrett or whoever's making decisions. You know, that would never get to the website without, you know, everybody signing off on it. And like, that's not true. I mean, we have our own editorial process, and we I talk to Nick and we talk to Derek and yada, yada, yada. But like, you know, that's not the way it works. So I'm just like, we're constantly, I guess, fighting that battle of like, you know, are we a mouthpiece and are we being fed information? And it's a little bit different because we are in the building and we do work for the organization. But, you know, we get our stories and our scoops the same way that the other outlets that cover the team do. I mean, it's how you build relationships. Maybe it's with a coach. Maybe it's with somebody else. Maybe it's, you know, it could be anybody from all up and down the chain. And that's the challenge of being a reporter, is building those relationships and finding people who trust you enough to tell you things. And different people go about it different ways. And yeah, and like I said, I mean, there's definitely a different dynamic because we are in that umbrella. I mean, we work under the same roof as these guys. But
it seems like Jerry has been over the years very hands off and kind of just lets you guys do your own thing.
Yeah, and I mean, kudos to him because I don't think there's I pay attention to this stuff now that I work for the site. You know, I look at how other teams do it, and I really don't think there's another team that lets their staff have as much autonomy and as much freedom as we do. We have just about every bit of independence that an independent organization would have to cover things. And it's nice. So kudos to the Jones family and the Cowboys for doing that. And it makes it a lot of fun, because I feel like it wouldn't be a lot of fun if it were run another way. To put it that way.
Fair enough. Listen, you guys, make sure you're following David and all his fine work at his multiple platforms, at DallasCowboys.com, his pieces with Star Magazine, and of course, his writing at Fox Sports Southwest. And also, he's a must-follow on Twitter. His handle is @HelmanDC. That's @HELMAN, capital D, capital C. David, thanks so much for coming on with us and answering all our sort of follow-up extra questions. We really appreciate you giving us the extra time when you're getting ready to head out to Oxnard.
Yeah, guys, it's not a problem. I had a lot of fun. Let's do it again sometime.
We'll be in contact during the season. We'd love to have you back on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, great stuff there from Dave.
I totally agree. I really appreciated how willing he was to pull back the curtain on some of the things that go on at Valley Ranch on his kind of day-to-day work life. And I'm really looking forward to having him come back and join us again during the regular season.
Rabble, it's really been great talking Cowboys again after such a long time. So when are we going to get to do this again?
Well, we're going to be talking Cowboys quite a bit in the, well, near and distant future, my friend. So I hope you've had a restful, quote-unquote, off-season from blogging and that you have your loins properly girded, because from this point on, we'll be podcasting more or less every week until the season's end, which, of course, because the Cowboys are going to win the whole damn thing, is going to be in late February.
Yeah, we won't stop until February because that's when they will stop.
Exactly. So in a week or so, we'll have the first of our camp podcasts in which we review the doings in Oxnard, share some thoughts on various position battles, and offer early assessments of the state of the 2015 Cowboys roster.
Well, it's great talking Cowboys again. And again, all this is possible through bloggingtheboys.com. They are your one-stop shop for the Cowboys information you need all throughout training camp, all throughout preseason, all throughout regular season, all throughout postseason, and through our Super Bowl win that's coming this year. Make sure you're checking out bloggingtheboys.com, the Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and on Twitter at Blogging the Boys. And until next week, folks, happy trails.
Happy trails, everybody.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together?
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails.